Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to episode number 568 of Smart Podcast Trashy Books. I'm Sarah Wendell, and my guest this week is Melanie Hamrick. Melanie is a former ballerina at American Ballet Theatre and has just released her debut romance, First Position. So we're going to talk about ballet and about balancing, both on your toes and through career changes. We also cover how much writing and ballet have in common. Now, I do want to mention we are talking about professional ballet and ballet theater, so there is some mention of disordered eating and extreme body consciousness. I will have links to all of the books, including Melanie's book, in the show notes at smartbitchestrashybooks.com/podcast. Hello, and thank you to our Patreon community, and I have a compliment this week to Rachel K. Someone is managing a very difficult task right now, and the thought of you and your determination and your thoughtfulness is inspiring them to keep going. If you have supported the show with a monthly pledge of any amount, thank you. You are making sure that the show goes on and that every episode has a transcript compiled by Garlic Knitter. Howdy, Garlic Knitter. Patreon subscribers have a private Discord that is just glorious, have bonus episodes, and help me shape the coming season, so it would be lovely to have you join us. Have a look at patreon.com/smartbitches. This episode is sponsored in part by Lumi Deodorant. The sun is shining. It's finally warm. And that means it's time for the extreme humidity of a DC summer, which is like the part I dislike the most about living here because I love everything else. But thankfully, Lumi Deodorant makes it easy to feel dry and comfortable, and they have wonderful scents to choose from. Lumi's best-selling scents like Lavender Sage, Clean Tangerine, and Fresh Alpine are wonderful, and they have new scents including Mint Cucumber and Soft Powder, which is one of my favorite things. And heads up, new customers get $5 off Lumi's starter pack with code SARAH30 at LumiDeodorant.com. Not only do I like Lumi a lot, I use the toasted coconut deodorant every morning. My teenagers like Lumi. The deodorant wipes disappeared as soon as they arrived, and they were used after gym class. But recently, my cream tube deodorant also vanished, and later on, I noticed a very pleasant lavender sage scent. Lumi is a first-of-its-kind deodorant. It was designed to be safe to use anywhere on your body, even your feet. It is aluminum-free, skin-safe, and clinically proven to control odor anywhere for up to 72 hours. Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid-stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, and two free products of your choice, like a mini body wash and deodorant wipes. Plus, free shipping. As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code SARAH30 at LumiDeodorant.com. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit LumiDeodorant.com and use code SARAH30. All right, you got your leg warmers? Let's do this podcast. On with my conversation with Melanie Hamrick.
Hi, my name is Melanie Hamrick, and I guess I'm a writer.
You are now.
That's a new thing to call myself and to think of myself like that. I was a ballerina for 16 years with American Ballet Theatre. And when I retired, I thought I was going to go into the choreography world. But it's sometimes best to say cut your losses if you're not that great at something. And I didn't have the passion I felt I needed to really get into that world. And everyone around me was like, Melanie, it's so obvious to all of us, right? You're always reading, you're taking notes in your phone. Like you, at the time it was May 2020 and the world was shut down and everyone was like, use this time, do what? Like you should write. Like, you know, my mom especially was like, please just write. Like, I'm, you know, I love your stories, but I think you should write them down, you know? And, so then I started writing and it just kind of came and it was really kind of therapeutic in a way to go back, and revisit the world I had worked in and been a part of my whole life. And now that it's coming out, I would say I'm a writer.
Congratulations. You're definitely, not only are you a writer, you're a published author.
It's crazy.
And if you're, you know, if you're going alphabetically, author comes before ballerina. So you're just lining up the alphabet here.
I know. Oh, and choreographer comes with the C. I got the ABCs going.
There you go. D, dancer. Got that too.
D, dancer.
Yeah. We just keep going. So congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm working on a book too. So it's crazy that that's why I'm still wrapping my head around like published author, writer, you know, all these fun things. It's a new world for me.
It is. It is indeed a new world and it takes some time getting used to. I have also published a few books, both nonfiction and fiction. And I always forget to say that I'm an author. It's never the first thing in my mind. Like, what do I do? Stuff? I do stuff. That's what I do.
But that's amazing. I mean, I feel like definitely I look at my friends who are writers and I'm like, you are a writer. But then when it comes to ourselves, we don't usually, I don't know, especially being a ballet dancer, it's like hard to recognize ourselves as being something, you know, and being, you know, and accomplishing something. It's hard to say that about yourself, I find.
It's very true. And there are a lot of ways in which I think people don't feel comfortable giving themselves a particular label unless it's been given to them. And there's nobody who walks up to you and says, congratulations, you are an author. Like you sign a contract. Yeah. That's part of it. You publish a book and your name's on it. That's part of it. But no one is like, and now you are an author. The ceremony is complete. You just kind of got to be like, well, I'm an author now. Guess so.
I'm going to put it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like you said, like a published, like once you publish it, I keep thinking, oh, maybe come June 20th when it's actually like you can buy it on Amazon now. But when Amazon starts mailing it and you can hold your copy, that then it will click and, you know, and I'll feel like confident being like, yeah, own this. I deserve it. You know,
you know, I honestly don't know when that comes, but I hope on the day of your release date for the book, you're like, yes, maybe you'll get like a crown. That'd be awesome.
I know. That'd be exciting.
You have to have some leftover from dancing, right?
I know. Lots of tiaras, sparkly earrings. You know, I've got some tattoos.
Yeah.
Crown myself.
Head to toe. This is now what published authors wear. You didn't know? Well, I want to say congratulations on first position. Tell me what your favorite pitch is for this novel. I know that one of the most common questions you get is, oh, you wrote a book. What's it about? And for me, my mind immediately goes blank. So I need to rely on like, okay, So what is your favorite elevator pitch or pitch generally for this novel when someone asks you?
That's such a good question because there's either the very short 5-word, it's about the ballet behind the scenes and it's sexy.
Okay.
That if you really want condensed, you know, ballet is kind of, it's got this mystery around it. So I would say it's a look, you know, behind the curtain at the seductive cutthroat world of ballet and a young girl navigating her way through it.
That's a very good pitch. I also think sexy behind the scenes ballet is really like that's all the hook you need.
Yeah,
that gets the job done.
Describe it. Yeah, I'd say sexy behind the scenes of the ballet and fun, you know. I hope people enjoyed reading it.
And there's so much behind the scenes too. Mm-hmm. Because the distance between the finished product and the work that goes to get there is considerable. There's a lot that you don't see when you're watching a performance like that.
Oh yeah. You don't even realize right off the stage. You have dancers sitting in the wings like eating a candy bar or fiddling with their shoes and I think the quick change scene booth and the quick change booth scene in the book, that is very real. Like, and I had someone say, really? They're like screaming backstage like that. I'm like, oh yeah, there's chairs. There's a water cooler. There's people sitting around. There's people running around. There's noise. You know, it depends on the theater and everything, but there's a considerable amount of mayhem in the wings and behind.
That's a good second title if you need Mayhem in the Wings.
Ooh, I like that.
I mean, I love sitting in the audience on the far right or the far left so I can sort of see behind, you know, off stage.
Oh, yeah,
right,
you see the dancers before they take it, or you see the dancers run and then they like, you see them really drop their
push. Yes, because you drop that poise like, okay, whew, all right, yeah. Let my ribcage hang down.
I used to always get that note in the ballet, like, Melanie, hold it a bit longer when you get in the wings. Like, it's like you see the wing and you're like, poof.
Yep.
Like, yeah. A little bit longer. Get in the wing all the way.
Yep. Yeah. So I love in the prologue of your book that your character has rules that she's written down, which, by the way, put no shit talk in writing is a really good rule. And like, literally no one follows that rule. It is excellent advice.
Like, it should be a rule for life, you know? Think about the text message before you send it. Think about the email, maybe.
You know someone's going to screen cap that text message or that tweet and be like, is this you? This is you, isn't it?
Remember 5 years ago when you said that? Like, everyone can see it and find it, that it's even more. It's not like your private notes on your phone or something. It's you out there in the world. So yeah, that was an important rule I wanted for Sylvie.
What were some of your rules while you were dancing? And were they similar to Sylvie's?
When I first started, before I joined the company, I was very like, never be late to work. And then, you know, about like 3 years in, I was always walking into class like 10 minutes late. but my particular role for myself was, because I learned this in ballet school, learn your part, but also learn everyone's roles if you can, because you never know when the opportunity is going to arise. And that was just something I had learned in ballet school that was important to me. And then as I was dancing, it changed, you know, maybe a little bit more of don't date at the workplace kind of thing, or like smile, even though you're raging inside. It's like things like that. Learn the choreography if it's not new choreography before you go in the room. So like, look like you're a fast learner, which is really important in the ballet world, because if someone gets injured or something and they need someone to fill in and they don't have any backups, they're going to be like, oh my God, Melanie's a really quick learner. Bring her in. I bet she could learn that role quick. So it's like you do, for me, it was like, oh, if Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, and I knew I had an idea what roles I was going to do or anything in the court of ballet, I would spend the weekend just like getting an idea of this basic choreography. So when I went in the room, I was ready. And they also, hopefully that made me a quick learner, but then everyone was like, oh my God, you're such a fast learner. And I'm like, kind of.
So it was to your advantage to sort of be a perpetual understudy for all of the roles that you might want.
Yeah. And I think a lot of dancers do that. You watch, you have an idea and you just watch these ballets over and over and over again, that you start to kind of, and like without even realizing it, you're learning them. Just so then when it comes time to actually stand up and learn them, you've seen it so many times.
You're serving your own ambition too. Like, you're acknowledging, yeah, I want to move up. I want to move into this position. What are the skills that I need to get there? Well, it's a sequence of steps. You can learn them.
Yeah. And then also, if I had missed a rehearsal one day, because maybe I'd taken a personal day, I didn't want it to affect me. So, I would be watching the video. I would have like one of my friends, because you're always videoing rehearsals, you know, kind of watching yourself. How do I improve? So I'd ask one of my, will you send me the video from rehearsal today? Yeah. And then so I could watch it and be like, okay. So I'm fresh. I'm sharp every time I go in, even if I miss a day.
That seems like a really good rule for life too. Like, to be aware of where you are in the progression of whatever field you're in and learn what's coming, what's the next step, what's the next position higher than yours, what's the next role that's higher than yours.
Yeah, maybe like be prepared for what you want kind of thing.
No,
that's good. I will use that. Thank you.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure it was, I might be getting the attribution wrong, but I think it was Seneca who said that luck is actually when opportunity and preparation meet. So if you've already done the preparation, whenever the opportunity shows up, it's like, oh, easy pie.
Yeah. And you just need that one chance, you know, and hopefully at some point you will get it. It might take years.
Yeah.
But hopefully you will get it. Yeah.
So going back to the sexy part of the behind the scenes of the ballet, which of course is of much interest. Because if the behind the scenes secrets and sex, people are like, I'm sorry, tell me everything. There's many, many a story founded on less. In your book, there are some dancers doing some very scandalous things. And I know it's fiction. I know it's fiction. But were any of the things in the book inspired by real events? Is someone going to be like super mad at you when they read this book and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you put that in.
Well, I definitely, you know, are based on stories. I mean, I was at the ballet for 16 years. My sister was a ballerina. So I have been in the world, definitely like her stories, my friends' stories. I mixed them all together and it was almost like a mixing pot. And I changed them enough that hopefully no one will be mad at me if they recognize something. And I feel like, you know, for a story, some things are a little exaggerated. Some things are nail on the head. And I definitely took from not only my own personal experiences, but that of my friends, colleagues, even just being around. Yeah. You hear so much, even, you know, if you're just even sitting on the side of the stage, you might just be minding your own business and you're like, ooh, that's happening over there. Okay. Yeah. You know, all of that. And I put it in a mixing pot and had some fun rearranging and having a good time. I remember I was talking to my friends sometimes. I was like, oh, remember that story in the dressing room? We were laughing. We were late to stage. Do you know, I might use something like that in there. You know, they laugh. Okay. Yeah. If there was anything, I don't think there is, because again, I wanted it to be fresh and I wanted it to be fresh characters, new characters, people having their own experiences.
Yeah.
So I feel like I did a pretty good job of making it no one's story.
No one's going to recognize themselves wholesale.
Well, I think like when you come to certain scenes, like dressing room, you know, experiences, quick change, love in the quick change booth. I feel like there's going to be quite a few people who are like, oh, did that. I've been there, done that. it's not only like, it's quite, you know, I would say not uncommon, those types of things happening.
Well, I mean, the quick change room makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. Because it's backstage, it's out of sight. And again, essentially, they're young. You know, when you join the ballet, you're a young teenager and you have, for the most part, probably given up your wild high school or university years. So it's like exploring your body, exploring what you like and dislike, and living that crazy wild time, but in beautiful costumes and beautiful cities. And it's almost like this hypersense of horned up teenagers running around.
No, it's exactly that. It makes me think of the Olympic Village, because I mean, I know there is a lot of going to Bone Town in the Olympic Village, because like you said, you have these young people who are incredibly high physical condition, who are very aware of their bodies, who are teenagers and therefore horny. Of course, people are going to be into each other. I mean, that's just what's going to happen in that environment.
Yeah. And you spend long days with each other and you're in quite revealing outfits. It's just when I was putting together my ideas for the book, I was like, why is there not a heavy romance at the ballet? How is this not something that has been explored, because it's so interesting. You know, you see the outfits ballerinas and male dancers wear. You spend long days and hours together. You travel together. It's like you're in this little protected bubble of understanding each other, but also being in such close physical contact with each other.
Yeah. I mean, it makes total sense. It's like being staff at summer camp, only a lot more, you know, tights and shoes.
Yeah.
I love this line from early in the book. I promise no spoilers when I do an episode. Quote, the effort and concentration never appearing on our smooth, placid, pleasant faces. That hit me like somewhere very, very deep, because I know that that's about ballet. Like I know that that is specifically about ballet, but that expectation applies in so many places, that you always have to look elegant, always look pleasing. Never let the effort show. If your toes are bleeding, you may not say so. Have you noticed that also being true outside of ballet?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm realizing it now, definitely, because it, you know, in the ballet, yeah, it's fascinating some of the things dancers will go to not show effort. Like, I remember this one dancer, she wouldn't drink water, like, the day of the show because she didn't want the audience to see sweat on her face. And I was like, you're going to pass out. Like, you're out on stage for, like, 3 hours. She's like, I'll take sips once the show starts, but I'm dehydrated enough no one will see the sweat on my face.
Oh, my gosh.
Crazy. Like, the devotion that goes to it.
Yeah. I'm going to hold on to my water bottle right now. Good gosh.
You know, so it's that mentality. And I have to say, I think it definitely does happen because you can't lose your temper at work if, say, there's trouble. That's not professional. That's not okay. You have to sometimes smile and roll with the punches and inside you might be screaming. Yeah, an adult trying to be an adult and smile, you know, and sometimes, and then, yeah, and going into writing and you hear critique or something, you have to smile and understand and put on that, like, not to show the effort of, oh my God, you hate the 50 pages I just wrote. okay. Like, you know, and that's, I find that it is in with all areas of life. You kind of have to go with that a bit. Don't show the effort. Yeah.
And with ballet, especially, there is such a very specific image and there's not a lot of, like, especially in the core, there's not a lot of room for variation. You're not supposed to stand out. You're supposed to move as one body. And in the opening scenes, that's what Sylvie's trying to do. She's trying to be a cohesive unit with a few other humans that she's not in control of. And she has to make it look like it's effortless when it is so much work.
And it is frustrating because, again, you never know what the person beside you is going through. If they had a bad day, if they have a problem at home, they aren't getting along with this. You never know what it's like. It's that famous quote. You never know what people are going through. So just treat everyone with kindness because you don't know. So sometimes at the ballet, you don't know what the person beside you is dealing with, but you're like, just get together. Like, can we please be uniform? And their mind might be distracted for whatever reason. You see Sylvie's mind is distracted and obsessing over. And the girl turned to her, well, if you got out of your head, and then they want to snipe at each other because going for that long and trying to be so exact while at the same time being moving as one and also trying to stand out, it's really tricky because if you stand out, you're like, oh, okay, maybe I'll get to move up. But then you've got two people, okay, the solo ballet mistress will be like, oh, that girl stood out. Like, oh, look at her. But then the core ballet mistress is going to yell at you because you stood out.
So
you're never going to make someone happy. But then if you don't stand out a little bit, you're going to be stuck in the core forever, probably.
Right.
So you just, like, find that balance. It can be very tedious and frustrating. And we spend hours and hours of trying to move together as one. I mean, but I thought we spent a lot of time, and I thought as the corps de ballet, you see it and you see them moving together and it's beautiful and it's art and the breathing. And then I went and I saw the raquettes and I was like, Wow, that is moving together as one.
Yes, like, that is a big core.
Vision. Yeah, that is. But it's different. They have their set routine, whereas in ballet, it's still artistic. But it blew me away how they really move as one. And it's interesting to see all the different variations of corps de ballets in the theater, at Radio City, in the ballet, and you all have the moments. But oh, it's really, it's almost mind numbing sometimes, because you'll talk about like the height of your arm for like 20 minutes and you're like, and then you go to do it and one or two girls does it differently. And you're like, were you not standing there for 20 minutes with the rest of us? Or you'll have this one scene is very famous by like Levaya Dare, and you have to do, it's about the first girl out probably does about 100 arabesques. It's like walk, walk, raise her leg behind her, walk, walk. And you all start to do it. And then say you get to the end and like I think there's 34 girls. Or 26, it depends on the size of the company. And you get to girl number 22, and she doesn't raise her leg to the right arabesque height. And they say, go back and start over. That girl at the first girl out, I mean, she gives you a look that yeah. will be like, I'll see you later. Like,
yeah. I will like, hoist your leg.
And it, yeah. And you rehearse the leg at the same height and you know, everything. And then they set it up where if they're worried, oh, that girl can't raise her leg, so we're going to like, but the girls who have like this, who can get their leg with confidence at a certain height where the visual will be there. And so you don't notice the girls who can't get their leg to a certain height. And it's all very by, you start a ballet by almost like a chart. Like that's how you start rehearsing by a formation, and you learn everything through formations. It's more detailed than I think people realize.
Oh yes.
And tedious.
Oh, very tedious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I took ballet for, doing math, 15 years. I started when I was 3 and I stopped when I was 18. I am not built for ballet. I am 5'4". I'm very curvy. So I was not of the ballet physique, but I studied it for a long time. And it is a lot of tedium.
Yeah. I was going to say, you have a lot of knowledge about ballet, more than just like doing research for the interview. You know ballet.
I know a little bit about it. And I remember I hated doing Rond de Jambe. I thought it was so boring. I was like, why am I moving my leg in a D? This is dull. I'm bored. And I was like 13, you know. I remember that tedium, but I also remember how important it was to be precise when you were dancing with other people. And the thing I always struggled was when I really, really, really didn't like someone, like we just did not get on, but because we were very similar in height and build, we were always put together. And I was like, I gotta dance with this girl again. Like I really don't wanna.
Yeah, that's common.
Yeah. And this happens with Sylvie in the start of the book, because whatever she's doing is not enough for the ballet mistress, but she doesn't understand what these people want from her, because no one is giving her concrete instructions on what she needs to do with her body and her mind to make it work. It's all this very esoteric, you know, non-specific language. And she's just like, won't you just tell me? Tell me.
And it's hard because you can't sometimes pinpoint, because yes, maybe she needs to do something. But I think in my mind, what Diana is trying to tell her is it's not only about being exactly the same. It's about like feeling your want to be up there.
Yes.
And that's what Sylvie is. She's missing her desire, and she's just doing it to be correct and be the same as the other girls. And she's good and she's being correct, but it's not enough. And Sylvie wants to be literal, like, well, tell me exactly what I'm missing. But sometimes in art, you can't pinpoint it. And that's what can be so frustrating in ballet. And it's funny. It made me think of sometimes people are like, you do the same thing. You start your day the same way you started when you were 5. Like, don't you like have it down by now? Actually I don't. And it reminded me, I think I loved writing so much because I felt like it's never good enough. Like even with first position, finally my editor was like, enough, Melanie, enough. This is no, you, it's
we're
good.
Done.
It's, we're like, this is it. You've locked. No, let me just go back and do one more thing. And it's like, never. It's like that. Like, it's very similar. Like writing, oh, this scene can be better. I know I can make it better. Let me just have another chance. And they're like, stop. You're like, it's good for, I would say, obsessive personalities. Dancing and writing. Like, just that perfectionism, you know.
Oh yeah.
The desire to be perfect, which in a lot of, I think, in life, a lot of people feel that in whatever profession they do.
Oh, absolutely. And the feeling never goes away. I mean, my first book came out in 2009. There are things I would change about it. There are things that I would go and change. If I could just borrow everyone's copy for 2 minutes, I just want to change this one word.
Yeah. It's interesting that I found so many things being a ballet dancer roll over into life, which I'm actually quite glad because I was terrified. I was like, what am I going to do?
Well, it's terrifying to say I'm retired and you're so young, right?
Yeah. And you have you've been doing ballet and you don't really know much more outside of ballet besides other ballet related things. And it's quite terrifying and to realize, oh, ballet actually rolls nicely into a lot of things. That was a relief for me.
What are some of the similarities you found between ballet and writing? I mean, obviously rehearsal and practice and the dedication to getting it right and constantly revising is a skill set that obviously will carry into. Are there others you've noticed?
I felt the work ethic, I have set this goal today and I am not getting up. I might be horrible what I put down on paper, but I'm not getting up until I get it down.
Yeah.
You know, you're used to long hours. You're used to accomplishing something that you feel might be hard to accomplish, you know, and I think that really helped me transition into writing. Accepting criticism was really important because, you know, it's so nerve-wracking to put your words on paper and then get feedback, even though it's not necessarily bad feedback, but you're still getting feedback. And every day at the ballet, you're getting feedback. Someone's telling you, oh, improve on that. You know, they might say, oh, that bit was good, but here's all the bits to improve. And it's similar to, I really like your idea and I liked this line. However, improve on this, and this.
Yeah.
And so I think that being able from all the years in dance, it helped me not take it as a negative thing. Like they're not putting me down by saying improve on this paragraph or this thought. They're helping me. So personal, like you're pouring yourself out.
And it's also, there's a parallel of that intimacy too, because in ballet, when you're getting feedback, sometimes you're getting feedback on your body.
Yeah.
You're getting feedback on your physical person. And that's that can be very intimidating. And when you're getting feedback on your writing, that's, you know, the words that came out of your brain, you're trying to write down emotion. I always say that romance is about empathy. Romance is traffic in empathy. You are being invited to have feelings along with the characters in this book. That's deeply intimate. So as the writer, you have to put them in there to begin with. That's very challenging to endure for long periods of time. And you did it for many, many years. Can I ask what your favorite ballet was? What was your favorite role?
That's a good question. Well, I was going to say what my favorite role I would have loved to dance is.
Tell me, I would love to hear.
Yeah, that's Sylvie I'm living vicariously through Sylvie when she gets to dance Juliet, because that was the role I always wanted to dance was Juliet. So when I wrote that final chapter, I was like, yes, that's how I want, you know,
some part of me has done Juliet. Some part of me has done this.
Yes. Yeah, this is, I've watched it, I've studied it, my writing it was in a way me getting to perform it, you know, that felt really good. There's so many fun roles. I loved dancing harlots in Romeo and Juliet. You get to be over the top, you get to be sexual, you get to be vulgar, you get to be funny, and you just give your heart and soul into the piece. And then on the very far, like, other side of it, I loved this ballet called Dama Camellias. I got to dance one of the principals in it, and that was just, like, my heart and soul. So they were very different ballets. One is a sweet, innocent young girl, and the other is, like, a vulgar, as you can tell by the title of the harlot. Like, those were probably my two favorite roles.
I get it. In my childhood academy, my favorite was always being the witch in Sleeping Beauty, because you get to take up the whole stage and not blend in. You have to stand out and you have to be intimidating.
Because you kind of get to break out of the confines of like the strict rules. Like I loved Swan Lake. I loved dancing what they call big swans in Swan Lake. I loved that role. I felt like I would fly through the air, but then to be able to take out that classical restriction and just, like you say, like fill up the stage and go for broke was really fun. It's different.
So we've touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious, what are some of the lessons that you've taken from your dance career that you still apply to your life now? I know for me, for example, I'm always, and I didn't realize this wasn't true for other people. I'm always aware of where my body is in space. Like when I'm moving, yeah. I know where my body is because I spent a really long time paying attention to where my body was in the space around me. So like if I'm doing yoga, I don't have to look to know where my leg is. I know where my leg is, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What are some of the lessons and things that you've taken from your dance career that apply to your life now?
I'm going to repeat myself, work ethic and dedication. Because at the ballet, it's about seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, I'm a lot of, sometimes people say, oh, that's okay. You're only in the corps de ballet. I know. The corps de ballet is a very vital part of the ballet. You know, it's, you can have Giselle's mad scene, but it's just a woman by herself going crazy if you don't have the reactions of people. You know, it's, I find that I'm aware of being and feeling, ballet has made me feel like I'm good enough, you know, like I made it here and I'm important in my place in my world. It sounds kind of selfish, but I mean, everyone's kind of the center of their own life. And I think ballet teaches you to be aware of your surroundings. And I'm obsessed with animals, so I'm always aware of my surroundings when it comes to animals. But also I feel like you try to be in touch with your body and listening to your body, and in life, feeling what you need to do. Like, okay, today I need to take off work. My body's run down. I need to listen to my body.
Yeah.
And which I would have never done at ballet. And the great thing that now I feel like with writing, I can do that and I can take that and I can listen to my body. Like, don't push yourself. It's giving you a warning. It's telling you there's a sign, there's a reason you're feeling this way, and give yourself the grace to like, be okay. Like take them in, you know, take the health day, take the sick day, and you will be better tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
And being really aware of the surround, maybe too aware of like your body and surroundings and positions, you know, like even on this interview, I know, like I'm touching my hair a lot. You know, it's like, I'm aware. Like,
yep. I always ask, are there books that you are reading that you want to tell people about? And it's okay if there aren't, because I know when you're writing, it can be very difficult to also read. You want the words to go out and not in.
Yeah, that was something I read all the time. And writing book one, I actually took a step back from reading, because I was afraid I was going to be influenced on what I was. And now I'm kind of, as I'm getting into book two, I'm actually reading a book for research for book two called Men on Lisco. And it's the story, there's a ballet called Men on. And so I'm reading the novel it's based off of. Mm. And it originally came out and it was considered too scandalous. So it had to be revised, and it came out, I want to say 15, 20 years later, it re-came out, reissued. And it is probably the most scandalous ballet I've ever seen. It's set, half the ballet set in a brothel. So you can imagine that it's,
this ballet has too much sex in it.
It came out 1753 or something like that, and it was like a French courtesan. You know, it's wonderful, and the ballet is wonderful. So I'm really enjoying reading that book, and I'm also reading right now one of my favorite authors, Colleen Hoover. I love her stuff. So I'm getting best of both worlds right now.
That's a lot of intensity you have going on there.
I'm like, before I get really like so far in the writing that I'm not going to like read for a bit, I'm like, oh, give me like all the different genres and all the different books to eat up, because there is a point where I will like pause on reading.
Oh yeah. I know that. Mm-hmm. I know that problem well. Where can people find you if you wish to be found?
I would say Instagram. I'm in the process of learning about TikTok and BookTok, which I really want to get into. But I would say I'm mostly present on Instagram.
Well, you are uniquely positioned for a lot of social media, because ballet talk and book talk are both very, very popular, and you can bridge both.
I know. I was trying to think of what would be my first TikTok. Should I be holding a book, burring across the room? You know, like, how do I gap? You know, but people are so creative on TikTok.
They really are. That's like my favorite thing about it.
Yeah. Like, how do you make your splash into that world?
And I have noticed that there are a lot of dogs on your Instagram.
Yes. And as I said, like, I'm obsessed with animals. Like, they surround me everywhere. And every time I go somewhere, I come home and I'm like, I got a new animal. Like, I think I have total, I have 4 dogs, 3 cats,
ooh,
6 chickens, 2 bunnies.
Wow. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. If you are thinking, I would like to see the chickens and the animals and the sheep, well, in the show notes, I will have a link to her Instagram. It is terrific. And I will have links to everything else we talked about as well. As always, I end with a terrible joke. And this week's joke is from Karen. Karen emailed me a joke and it just made me so happy. All right, are you ready? Which country's capital has the fastest growing population? Give up. Which country's capital has the fastest growing population? Ireland. Every day it's Dublin. If you're Irish and you're really mad, please let me know, because that joke is just terrible. On behalf of everyone here, we wish you the very best of reading. Have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you back here next week. Smart Podcast Trashy Books is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.